Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 22, Balimara surrenders his life, text number 29. To 30. Shina Riktas Chutak Stanat. Shipto Badas Shatrubi. Jani Jat Tibis Chaparityakto. Yatanam Anu Yapitaha. Shina Rikta. Although bereft of all riches, Chutaha, fallen, Stanat, from his superior position, Shipta, forcibly thrown away, Badacha, and forcefully bound, Shatrubi, by his enemies, Jativicha, and by his family members or relatives, Parityakta, deserted, Yatanam, all kinds of suffering, Anuyapita, unusually severely suffered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Although bereft of his riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pain of being bound and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Bali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly with pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his vow, his word. So who's speaking here? What? The Brahma. It says Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. So Krishna is speaking, and he's talking to Brahma. And he's talking to Brahma. So it's Krishna talking to Brahma. Purport. Bali Maharaj passed the severe test put before him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is further proof of the Lord's mercy towards his devotee. The Supreme Personality of Godhead sometimes puts the devotee to severe tests that are almost unbearable. One could hardly even live under the conditions forced upon Bali Maharaj. That Bali Maharaj endured all these severe tests and austerities is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord certainly appreciates the devotee's forbearance and is recorded for the future glorification of the devotee. This is not an ordinary test. As described in this verse, hardly anyone could survive such a test. But for the future glorification of Bali Maharaj, one of the Mahajans, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only tested him, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity. The Lord is so kind to his devotee that when severely testing him, the Lord gives him the necessary strength to be tolerant, continue to remain a glorious devotee. So the text again, although bereft of his riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pains of being bound, and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Bali Maharaj being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly with pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his word. If we want to make progress in anything, we have to be tested. Just like, for instance, if you want to learn how to lift weights, you have to do it more than just mentally. You may spend 3 hours a day lifting weights within your mind, but if you don't practice, then you're going to get simply weaker. And if you start with lifting weights and you lift, say, 20 kilos every day for 20 years, you're not going to make any progress. That without increasing the lifting of the weight, then at best you'll stay at lifting 20 kilos, or maybe you might fall down to 15 or 10 after some time. So similarly, if we want to make advance in a devotional service, we have to be tested. In American English, they talk about fair weather friends. You know what that means? You don't know what fair weather friends? Whenever one is very enthusiastic, whenever the weather's nice, one is very helpful. But as soon as the clouds start forming, one runs away. So when everything's going nice, we're very appreciative of our friends. And as soon as they get into trouble, we find some other friends. So the real test of friendship is when you actually need them. Not that I'm friends with you as long as you don't ask anything from me. As long as our friendship is not tested. Similarly, marriage has to be tested, for instance, at least when they make the vows for the devotees, they say in happiness and in distress. I love you as long as there is happiness. As soon as there's any distress, that I find someone else to find happiness with. As long as the sugar is in the chewing gum, I keep on chewing it. And when it runs out, I spit it out. So similarly, Krishna, he wants to get free from our attachments to this material world, because our attachment to the material world in the Bhagavatam is compared to a person who's asleep, and in his dream, he sees his head being cut off. Now, how is it possible that your head could be cut off in your dream? When you wake up, do you think, wow, my God, my head's on the table? It's not really happening. But you're thinking it's happening, and therefore you're suffering the pain of having your head cut off, but it's just a dream. Similarly, in this material world, which is the best virtual reality available that's possible, we actually imagining that we're going through all these different things that our body and even our mind and our false ego is going through. But it actually has nothing to do with our real self. Even if our head gets cut off, the little tiny spirit soul's head doesn't get cut off. Nothing happens to the soul. But because he's thinking something is happening, and because it's a virtual reality, it is happening within his consciousness. Therefore, he thinks he's experiencing what's going on. Well, he's experiencing what's going on, but he thinks what's going on is it's happening to him. It's not happening to him, although he's experiencing it. Just like if you go to the movies, of course, the devotional movies. Then when you watch the movie, you identify with it, then you actually experience something like you're actually going through it. Otherwise, what would be the sense of watching the movie if you thought, well, it's just a movie, it's just some light flashing on the screen? You have to get emotionally involved, or else there wouldn't be any point in going there. You have to be willing to get emotionally involved. So we've come to the material world, and unless we're emotionally involved in the material world, it doesn't work. Unfortunately, for the conditioned soul who wants to enjoy the material world, his getting emotionally involved doesn't make it any more enjoyable. Although he gets it to work, but it doesn't work the way he wants it to work. As it says, Kamadi nam katida katida palitas dorni deshas te shamayijata na karuna na trapati prati. Utsridhatam yatapate labhabuddhis tam arunam sharanam tvam uyikshva siddhasye. That we're, in so many different ways, we're serving our material desires. Material world means to serve desires. The principal desires are, we want to make sure that we can eat. The worst news that you can find out, just like now, Russia has cut off its energy supplies to Europe. If you want to buy some gas, you better find some rubles. So what's the problem? We can walk. Unfortunately, probably none of us are growing any food. And if there's no energy, it's very, not only is it hard to grow food if you don't have a tractor nowadays, because there are no cows or horses or anything to till the land, or to harvest the land, or to bring it to the market, or to sell it, or to go there, you need energy. And there's no energy, there's no food, there's no food, then we're very disturbed. Imagine if they say, well, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, because there's nothing, there's not going to be anything to eat for the next 5 months. So you might as well relish the holy name, because there's nothing else you can relish. Of course, you can go to Rivoli Park. There may be some flowers if no one else took them before you did. There may be one or two wild strawberries left. So people would become very disturbed. And if we told you, you can't sleep in class or anywhere else, we'd become very disturbed. Of course, mating we could do without, but most people, that's all they live for. They hardly even pay attention to their eating. They can go without sleeping as long as they can have some kind of sense gratification. And of course, people... defending means playing video games. That's as far as they can do it. Kill the dragons in the dungeon all day long. So material life means sense gratification. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And people are very disturbed if they can't do these things, because that's all they identify with themselves. That's all they live for. And therefore, one is always tested, even in the material world, because the result of sinful activities, if we don't eat, sleep, mate, and defend properly, then there's problems. But unfortunately, people have nothing to take shelter of. When there's problems, they take shelter of things that cause them more problems. This is especially true in Kali Yuga, where it says, Prayena Yapusha Jana Kalavasmin Yujay Kala. That in this age of Kali, Kala Ayush, what is it? That in this age of Kali, people have but short lives. Short lives is Ayush, Alpa Yusha. Kalavas minyuge jana, manda samanda matyo, manda bhaga upodrutaha. Then in this age of Kali, people but have but short lives. Kalena, apusha jana, shabdya, kalavas minyuge jana, manda samanda matyo, manda bhaga upodrutaha. So they're unlucky. Their lives are short, first of all. They're unlucky because they never have proper knowledge. So everything they do is not very fortunate. They're trying to solve their problems, but by solving their problems, they're creating more problems for themselves. Therefore, they think, because they don't know how to live, they don't know how to eat, they don't know how to sleep, they don't know anything. They can't figure out, they don't know how to stay married, they don't know how to raise children, they don't even know how to die. They don't know anything. Therefore, they're very unlucky. And Manda, or they're lazy, Manda, Sumanda, Matayo, Manda Bhagya, unfortunate and always disturbed. Because they're always disturbed, they can't pass any test. They have no patience because they have no idea that they're eternal. Therefore, everything has to come immediately. And if it's not coming immediately, they become completely destroyed, distraught. A man would stop at a light in Texas, and the light turned green. And the car behind him honked the horn because the man in the front didn't move. So the man in front, who didn't move when it was green, became so disturbed that someone was honking his horn at him, he took a rifle and shot the man in the head, the car behind him. That's called impatience. Because they don't know there's karma, there's reincarnation. They don't know about eternity. They don't know what the goal of life is. They have no knowledge. Therefore, their whole life is a failure. They may accumulate millions and billions and trillions of dollars in this lifetime, but as Prabhupada said, how much can they eat? What are they accumulating it for? If you have $10 billion or €10 billion, can you sleep more? Can you sleep more than 24 hours a day? Can you get 10 million women to enjoy if you have €10 billion? And what about defending? King Ugrasena had 10 quadrillion, had 25 quadrillion bodyguards, and still he had to leave this world. So how many quadrillion bodyguards do we need to protect ourselves? Therefore, unless we can take shelter of something superior, then everything we're doing is a failure. Or as it's probably once said, you can't win and you can't break even in this material world. But everyone's hoping. The whole advertisement is, you can do without God. God is just the opiate for the masses. The time of death, the scientists will save you. They have a special pill. They'll put you on a machine that even if you want to leave your body, they won't let you. Or they promise eventually they'll make you into a program, because after all you're just chemical. They'll figure out what chemical you are. They'll analyze the chemical. They'll put it into a computer and you'll live forever in the computer. If you're really good, they'll put you in an Apple computer. Otherwise you have to settle for a Windows computer or an Android or something. If you're an Apple computer, you're in heaven forever. If you're an Android, you're in hell. You have to suffer forever in an Android. Unless they update the system. So people are imagining that. They don't need God. They don't need any higher consciousness. They think if I become an animal, then everything will be all right. But Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, the very thing that people are afraid of, what is the worst thing that can happen to someone? You become humble. Is that right? That's what everyone's afraid of. Bow down, mister. people become aghast, not so much by the robes we wear or the sari or whatever else. They become aghast if they see us bowing down to a person. My God. Or some, they're bowing down to these statues. They've gone crazy. They're brainwashed. And worse than that, I saw them. There was a plant. Could you believe in a plant? It didn't have any fruit. Just some leaves, tiny leaves. And they were paying, they were bowing down before it. Not only they were bowing down, they were singing. They're completely crazy. Not only they were singing, but they were dancing around it. At the end, and they bow down. So people think we're actually crazy. And they can't understand, humble. I mean, it's all right, they bow down before a person. Maybe he's feeding them or something. But these statues, they're even offering food to them. It must be frustrating. They're offering food every day. And the statues never eat. But there's this idea of humility. That's the worst thing. They don't want to bow down to anyone. If you really, in American English, they have this saying, kiss my boots. So this is what people are most afraid of having to become humble, humbled. Involuntarily forcing you not to be able to eat or sleep or mate or defend. This is like abominable. Some person lording it over you. So because that's all the people are doing in the material world, is trying to lord it over everyone, from the lowest living entity down up to the highest. Everyone, to some degree or another, is trying to control others, maybe for their benefit and maybe for other reasons. And we always blame someone else. If you really want to control someone and humble them, then you say someone else is doing it. I'm your friend, but actually I'm trying to protect you, but this other, this demon, this ogre, he's doing it. I can't help you. I'm trying, but I can't do it. Although you're doing it. The ogre, he's under your command. But you blame him for everything. But Krishna, he doesn't want to see his devotees lazy and not making spiritual advancement. And therefore, he sends his devotees to give association. And amongst them, there is someone you choose as a spiritual master, and his job is to help you become humble. Not just by telling you what to do, but also by trying to show some humility himself. Be humble, you rascal. Bow down before me. Yes, boss. you're a perfect example, but I'm trying to learn. One day I'll become the boss. And I go, hey, I'm the boss. Hey, you bow down before me. I learn from my boss. Now one has to serve, but one has to choose someone who's a servant of his servant, of the servant of the servant. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never claimed he was the master. He said, dasa dasa anudasa, gopi bharata para kamalera, dasa dasa, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. So that's the real test. How much we can remain the servant of the servant in spite of any difficulty. So therefore it says, Prabhupada writes here, such one, not by an independent study of books or this verse, Tarko Pratishta, Shruti Avibhina. One has to approach a spiritual master to receive this knowledge. And such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Because it's necessary. Without that, the time of death, who do we take shelter of? Who do we actually think about? Whose instructions do we follow at the time of death? Such a spiritual master should be, satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. So ultimately we accept Srila Prabhupada as the self-realized spiritual master, but he has his associates, and since most of us can't talk to the deity, Prabhupada or Krishna, we have to talk to his representatives. And therefore, under Prabhupada's instructions, we learn how to satisfy his representatives, and that will satisfy him also. Not that we don't satisfy him. Therefore, we have Guru Puja in the morning, we worship the deities for their satisfaction, but we do it under the direction of his representatives. And then, inquiries and submission constitute the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual advance, understanding. So if we want to understand, because that's what we're trying to do, it's just a Krishna consciousness, the question of developing consciousness. And that's depending upon our realization, our understanding. So inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. So we have to be here submissively without a challenging, oh, you're saying this, but I don't really accept it. You know, who knows what you're talking about? I know much better than you do. You're wasting my time. There's such a thing, we'll never be able to hear anything. Unless we're convinced that actually Krishna knows something. And if someone's repeating what Krishna says, then we think, well, there's something that he listened to. Something that can help me become Krishna conscious. So inquiries and submission. If we're not inquisitive, what do you have to say? If we have a challenging mood, I dare you to tell me something that I'm going to listen to. Or that I'm going to accept. If we're not inquisitive, what do you have to say? And then when someone says something, we actually submissive. Yes, now I'm going to try and understand it. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be accepted. So the bridge is submission. First there's inquiries, there's submission, and then that submission develops into service, and then if we're actually inquisitive, then the self-realized spiritual master can tell us something, if we can hear something from him of some value. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees a genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. So this, of course, is Krishna. He's in our heart, along with externally Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And Krishna, when he sees that we're actually sincere, we're trying to understand, we're actually going through the process of inquiry, submission, and service, in spite of the difficulties that are presented to us. Because every moment is a challenge. We're always being challenged. Maya is always ready to defeat our consciousness. But sometimes there's bigger challenges. The bigger challenges means more of an effort. That's all. If we're actually trying to become Krishna conscious, when there's a big challenge and we make a big effort, then there's big advancement. And if everything is going well all the time, like you live in a climate like Bali or something like that, the weather's always perfect, it's always 21 degrees, day and night, forever. There's no newspaper that tells you what the weather is. People don't care about the weather. They find something else to concern themselves with. So if everything's going all right, there's no reason to take shelter of Krishna. Everything's all right. But once things get difficult, then we find some reason to take shelter of Krishna, and we make spiritual advancement if we do that. And if we think something's going wrong now, let me take shelter of an air conditioner. The weather's not perfect anymore. Then we're already conditioned, but then we'll be also air conditioned. So that's worse. It's bad enough to be in condition, but when you become air conditioned, that's really too much. Therefore, one has to be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses him with genuine spiritual understanding. So realization will come there, as Krishna says, Tesham sadatam yuktanam bhajantam priti purvakam didami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to worshiping me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So when Krishna sees, we remain steady in our enthusiasm, in our determination, in our sadhana, in our service, then he gives us more and more intelligence to understand how to become even more fixed in our sadhana, in our service. He himself gives us intelligence so we can understand we're not this body, that we're eternal. It's not us that's going through these things, although we're conscious, we're experiencing it, but we are going to live eternally, despite whatever problems there are in the material world. So Krishna will give us more and more intelligence like that. Not necessarily how to solve the problems, but how to solve our real problems, our identification with the problems. And then when we pass the test, Krishna sees we're actually utilizing properly the intelligence he's giving us, then he personally reveals himself to us. And then in the ecstasy of being Krishna conscious, all the material contamination is burned away, and we realize we're eternal. We realize our spiritual identity, and all our problems are solved eternally. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiry is condemned. One should not only hear submissively, but one should get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiries. So our real enemies are blind following, laziness. We don't want to use our intelligence in Krishna service, spiritual intelligence. And absurd inquiries. We have so much intelligence, but nothing about devotion. One is sentiment, I just blindly following. The other is just excessive speculation. Dry philosophy, just asking meaningless questions, not about practical service. So either way, one will perhaps hear submissively, but unless there's actually service, unless there's taking up some practical service in Krishna service, then these inquiries will not be effective. One can ask millions of questions, one may follow blindly for millions of years, but unless there's really practical service, then nothing will actually be revealed. Therefore, what is Prabhupada right at the end of the purport? In this verse, both blind, following, and absurd inquiries are condemned. One should not only hear submissively, but one should get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiries. The spiritual master by nature is very kind to the disciple. And so when the disciple is always submissive, is ready to render service, then the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Anyhow, these are verses we should study very carefully. Does it? 434. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Submissively. Be prepared to render some service.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the lecture. I was wondering, you said that we aren't very lucky because we live short lives. But isn't that actually kind of a good thing because we just have to be Krishna conscious for 100 years or so, and Maya is always looking over us, always praying on us. So we have less time to fall down from Krishna consciousness if we live short lives.
Short life? We live forever. We got to take advantage of whatever life we have to become Krishna conscious. We're not looking for a short life or a long life. We're looking for a Krishna conscious life. As far as Maya, it's not an endless, Maya is attacking us endlessly. Maya is just teaching us. And gradually we become purified and we get some more and more knowledge and therefore we become steadier and steadier in Krishna's service eventually. So Maya is simply our teacher, that's all. She's offering us things that we're not conscious of, that we may become attached to. And therefore she's always testing us. To see, encouraging us to take shelter of Krishna more and more, and giving up our materialistic desires. But that we don't have unlimited desires. And especially if we develop a desire to serve Krishna, then Krishna will take care of more desires than we can think of, than we're conscious of. When we get the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, when we actually feel the love and ecstasy of associating with Krishna and his devotees, then the result is that all these other things will seem insignificant. All the material desires we had will seem insignificant. Like Dhruva Maharaj got the kingdom, he got the opportunity to get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, but when he became aware of Krishna and he was in ecstasy, then he thought this kingdom greater than that of Brahma is insignificant. I don't even need it. I don't want it. I just want Krishna. Anything else?
There's questions. Oh.
First live.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for a very inspiring lecture. I have a commentary and one question. I've heard from the people from outside that actually they are wondering why, when we bow down, why we are kissing the floor.
Well, because usually during the Sunday feast, they spill a lot of sweet, a lot of prasadam on the floor, and part of it is like sometimes they spill gulab jamun juice on the floor, so our floors are very sweet.
So they find it very funny. And actually the question was, how to stay humble if we are
we're so great
in a challenging situation, and stay tolerant.
Well, it takes practice. Everything takes practice. But the major thing is we have to understand who we actually are, and what the circumstances are, and how Krishna would like us to act, how Krishna's representatives would like us to act, and then we have to make a determination to act like that, to develop the mood that they like us to have, that was appropriate, to see things the way they want us to see it. Then it becomes possible. Otherwise, it's impossible. If we don't know how to act, we don't know what the proper mood is, we don't have the proper vision, then we're going to fail every time. Therefore, we get beaten enough, then we might come and listen to class to find out what the proper way of acting is, what the proper vision is, what the proper mood should be. And then we might get another test and do a little bit better than we did before.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
There's some on the internet by Avadutta Rayadasa. The Upanishads state that the soul is let out of the body through a particular nadi at death by the light of the super soul as a guide. Bhagavatam and Purana state that the Yamadutas lead pull drag the soul out. Question, how to combine these two versions?
The Upanishad said what?
Excuse me?
What did the Upanishad say?
Upanishad state that the soul is led out of the body through a particular nadi at that by the light of the super soul as a guide.
Well, it depends on who you are. For those who are very sinful, the Yamadutas drag him out. He doesn't want to leave. And for those who are spiritually inclined, then the super soul will help guide this. The super soul is always guiding us. He's trying to guide us, but if we take advantage of his guidance, then we can go to a higher place. And those who don't, they'll be forced out by the Yamadutas.
By Bhakti Yoga Tilburg, Hare Krishna Maharaj, are anarthas and offenses the same? Like some of the offenses to the holy name seem like anarthas?
Anarthas are things that we shouldn't be doing. And offenses are things definitely that we shouldn't be doing. But specifically, they're apara, they're against apa, against Radharani, they're against devotional service. So sometimes we have some tendency to do something which is wasting our time, but that may not be offensive.
There is one more by Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. When you are in the process of becoming Krishna conscious, solving the problems of your day-to-day life is sometimes difficult because of still lack of Krishna consciousness. Then how to make decisions what to do?
Well, don't make any decisions unless you know what to do. So we have to humbly investigate through Guru Sadhana and Shastra, praying to the Super Soul to give us the intelligence and the realization and what we have to do to become qualified to know what to do. And when we're qualified in Krishna, everything becomes clear, then we can act, we can do it. But if we don't know what to do, then we shouldn't do anything until we know what to do. We should go through the process of finding out what to do, rather than just doing something. Otherwise, if we act without proper understanding, then that's called whimsical. And one will not get any beneficial result from acting whimsically. Okay. Kuala Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.